Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Wednesday, December 26th. I'm Ray Graff. 2018 has been a whirlwind of striking headlines and shocking stories. There was a historic summit between President Trump and North Korean leader Kim Jong-un, influential elections, an intense battle over a Supreme Court nominee, as well as deadly and devastating wildfires and natural disasters. In our own listening area, there were many heated political campaigns, the start of recreational marijuana sales in Massachusetts, and of course the terrible limo crash in Schoharie, New York. Here to discuss the top news stories of 2018, Larry Parnas of the Berkshire Eagle, Judy Patrick, Vice President of Editorial Development of the New York Press Service, and our own Ian Pickus. Your call's coming up at 800-348-2551. Vox Pop begins after the news.
This is the most deadly transportation accident in this country since February of 2009.
The investigation at the scene revealed that a 2001 Ford Excursion limousine was traveling southwest on State Route 30 and failed to stop at the intersection with State Route 30A. The limousine traveled across the intersection into a parking lot and struck a 2015 Toyota Highlander that was unoccupied and parked. Two pedestrians standing nearby were also struck and killed. In total, 20 victims were killed.
This is a new day for New York 19.
On election night, when several New York House seats flipped, Representative Elise Stefanik survived. The 21st District Republican will serve a third term after easily winning re-election.
My job is to represent everyone in this district.
Democrat Anthony Brindisi has defeated Republican U.S. Representative Claudia Tenney in a congressional race in upstate New York, settled more than 3 weeks after Election Day.
Mr. President, you have underestimated the strength of America's better angels. Because what binds us together is stronger than what divides us. And because at the end of the day, love is stronger than hate.
The people of the Commonwealth like what we do, and they like how we do it. So much so, they gave us a big win.
In electing a governor of one party and a legislature by another, the message Vermonters have sent to us tonight is clear. Work together.
Berkshire County in the district attorney's office can do so much for this community, and that's what I intend to do.
It's an historic day in Massachusetts as it became the first state on the East Coast where recreational marijuana is being legally sold.
But there are people who have been, gone to jail for, even having paraphernalia, 20 years ago. So this is a huge step forward for all of us.
It's not so much elation I feel today, but relief that we have driven that final nail in the coffin of prohibition.
I'm not going to leave as mayor. I represent the city of Cohoes. We have done more in 18 months than we've seen in 20 years. I think the people of Cohoes have great faith in me.
Declaring an end to its controversial art sale, the Berkshire Museum says it's moving forward.
We have raised a substantial amount of money, $3.25 million.
This week, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change issued a special report warning that world governments must limit global warming to 1.5 degrees Celsius above pre-industrial levels to ensure a sustainable world.
If you would like to stabilize global warming to 1.5 degrees Celsius, the key message is that net CO2 emissions at the global scale must reach zero by 2050.
Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. As you just heard, we are reviewing the top news stories of 2018 today, and in the studio to do that, Larry Parnas of the Berkshire Eagle, Judy Patrick of the New York Press Service, and WAMC's Ian Pickus. And you are welcome to join in the conversation by calling 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. What are your thoughts about the year in news? give us a call, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, that number is 800-348-2551. Larry Parnas, Judy Patrick, Ian Pickus, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Ray.
Thank you.
Nice bit of production there, Ian. Was that you?
No, Jim Lavoulis, the producer of this show.
Nicely done.
All I did was listen to it.
You know, as I get older, you look back at years and they're compressed. It all happened at once. This year seems like the longest year of news that I could possibly remember. So let's go around the studio and pick out some highlights. We'll start with Judy Patrick, who is Vice President of Editorial Development for the New York Press Service. Welcome to the show. And are you glad it's over?
You know, I am glad it's over. But whenever you look back at the news, at all the things that happen in our business, we notoriously think that bad things are what makes news. And so I look back and say, all these bad things happened in 2018. And I'm a little worried about 2019 now because so much happened. I mean, it was like a freight train coming at you, a very, very long freight train. Every day, if you listen to Roundtable, it's like they never ran out of news. And
Never ran out of bad news.
Never ran out of bad news. And like the good news was, you know, once a month maybe. But, you know, from my perspective, I was really interested in the fact that you led with that limousine crash in Schoharie County back in, I think it was September, and the fact that 20 people died.
October.
And the fact that it brought to light the fact that those stretch limousines are largely unregulated, and the fact that 20 people, I mean, my God, that is a huge number of people to die, and that they were all in a place that I, you know, have always loved, which is Montgomery County, and those families were just devastated. And from a local story, I thought that was really big news, and it's one that really tore at my heart.
Larry Parnas of the Berkshire Eagle, obviously marijuana creating quite a buzz over there in your...
Is that bad news or good news to you?
See what I said there. No, what's the biggest one for you?
Boy, I would pick three. I think the Berkshire Museum still made news this year. It was really kind of front-loaded on the first part of the year. But it was right up to the last minute in terms of when they would stop selling art. The fractures through the community were apparent all year long here. I think another significant one is cannabis. I think cannabis culture is really going to influence life as we know it in Massachusetts and soon in New York State, probably,
and Vermont as well.
Yeah, it's really changing. It's unstoppable, and I'd say another kind of late breaker for us in Berkshire County was Wayfair, a $1 billion online retailer picking Pittsfield, and I don't think it's just because Niraj Shah, the co-founder, is from Pittsfield. They shopped it, and they looked at a lot of different places in Massachusetts, and they continue to open call centers throughout the country and world. 300 jobs in Pittsfield was a nice way to end the year for an announcement from Wayfair.
Ian Pickus is the WAMC News Director, and Ian, we cover politics, and it was an election year, but interested to know if there was anything besides politics that stuck out for you as the big one.
That's funny. I was going to say that the ripple effects from the Trump administration, they really impacted everything we did.
Yeah.
And I'll give you an example. Lucas Willer did some tremendous reporting in the past few months in the Albany County Jail, where a lot of immigrants who had crossed into the U.S. were being held, it emerged. And the county sheriff has used the opportunity while these migrants are being held here to try to get legal services into the jail, to try to get people get their paperwork going in the right direction so there's some sort of resolution. That's a story that isn't expressly about politics, but it is a political reaction to a federal policy. And you saw it sort of, show up right in your backyard here in Albany. And so, you know, Lucas has helped to expose that story. Sarah Rogerson, who is on the roundtable panel as well, doing a lot of work there. And there's so many stories like that that come from, you know, a tweet in Washington, and then they show up here in the Northeast in a different way.
And that has changed. The whole tweeting business carrying so much weight has certainly changed the equation for many in our industry. Of course, closer to home than Washington, we had Antonio Delgado winning. And that was a pretty huge story.
It was. And actually, Congressman John Faso was here this morning for his last Congressional Corner taping with Allen as he's finishing his last week in Congress or so. And I think during these midterms, especially the Claudia Tenney race with Brindisi in the Utica area, which went down about 1,200 votes, Antonio Delgado unseating John Faso. You saw that push for a blue wave really come through here in the Northeast, because some of those swing districts are in our listening area. And of course, we had the debate across the street. The first time John Faso showed up here after being elected for a Vox Pop early in his term, the lines were loaded. And at some point, we had protesters standing outside. And that usually doesn't happen after a midterm election.
Yeah, you make a point. Wow. Judy Patrick is here from the New York Press Service, Larry Parnas of the Berkshire Eagle, and WAMC's Ian Pickus. We talk about the year in review, the top news stories of 2018. We'd love to hear your thoughts on the subject. The number is 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551 is the number, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org, voxpop@wamc.org. Tell you what, let's take a quick break, and then we'll come back, and we'll talk some more. We'll get to the phones and whatnot. It's Vox Pop. We'll be right back.
Support for WAMC comes from Wild Bird Junction Backyard Nature Shop, 308 Delaware Avenue, Delmar. Offering wild bird seed, bird feeders, bird houses, heated baths and de-icers, binoculars, and nature gifts. Wishing listeners happy holidays. WildBirdJunction.com. Interim Healthcare. Helping people remain at home, providing companions, aides, and nurses, serving the Capital Region, Columbia County, Glens Falls, and Saratoga. Wishing WAMC listeners happy holidays. InterimHealthcare.com. Capital CarShare, a nonprofit car sharing network in the Capital Region, offering neighborhood transportation with a fleet of eco-friendly vehicles. CapitalCarShare.org for donations and information. Empire Exhibits and Displays, Mechanicville, New York, providing custom display fabrication, interactive exhibits, and rental gallery walls for special events, museum exhibitions, and trade shows nationwide. EmpireExhibits.com. Saratoga Jewish Community Arts, presenting the film The Women's Balcony, a comedy about fanaticism, sexism, and tolerance, Sunday, January 6th, 7 p.m. at Temple Sinai, 518-584-8730, option 2. And Patricia Dalton Fennell, producer, spotlighting the holiday CD classic Baby It's Cold Outside with Chris Payson, trumpet, Armin Donelian, piano, and Patricia Dalton Fennell, vocals, patriciadaltonjazz.com.
Vox Pop on WAMC, 800-348-2551 is the telephone number. The top news stories of 2018, only a few days left in this very tumultuous year. And I think we're all looking forward to turning over a new leaf in 2019. However, Judy Patrick is not that optimistic that 2019 will be a much less tumultuous year.
You know, hopefully, personally, it will be. But I'm sure that the runoff is going to be rocking and rolling every day of 2019.
Yeah, it has been. It's kind of like a slow drip water torture, except that it's a Niagara Falls every day.
Right. There's no drips about any of this.
Never stops.
It seems like. So you were going to. So also of note this year, I think that what drove home for me that was really important was the impact of what was happening in our climate. Like you got the you've got those wildfires in California were incredible. And it's just that the impact it was on people was astounding. And the images we saw from both print and video, and then some of the reporting that I heard on radio and in podcasts was showed how directly climate change can affect us. It's going to affect us here in the Northeast. It's going to affect people in Southern California for centuries to come. Let's do something about it.
Judy Patrick is here from the New York Press Service, and Larry Parnas of the Berkshire Eagle, Ian Pickus from WAMC. Larry Parnas, the casino is now about a little over a year in?
Not quite. It opened in August, I think.
What have we seen as far as the effects of that? Has it been as expected?
I think so. Their revenue numbers were pretty impressive. For the first few months. I think that was attributed to people checking it out. They need to make this a recurring entertainment option that people take. And I saw recently that they were increasing the odds or bettering the odds for slot machine players so that they had more payouts. If you want to feel like you're a lab animal, then go to a casino and be, you know, a subject of their calculations.
Yeah.
It's not just algorithms that control our lives.
Well, I mean, it is a question of calculations, and you're right. It's counterintuitive to some extent. You make the slots pay better, more people will go. But the competition is now fierce, and those mammoth Connecticut casinos have been feeling the downturn of the economy for about 10, 15 years now. And now this has happened, the Springfield casinos. So the competition is really heating up, and it'll be interesting to see how Springfield casino maintains that level 2, 5, 10 years from now.
Yeah,
and don't forget the New York casinos, which in their initial year they came in lower than originally anticipated, and they are taking some of that business away from our surrounding states.
You know, when it comes to separating people from their money, it's a complicated psychological thing, and here we now have the arrival of commercial cannabis, recreational cannabis use for people over 21. Just for an experiment, I went to one of the online sites because you can pre-order at these stores.
You're talking about the recreational marijuana outlets in Massachusetts.
Yeah, so you can go. I believe most of them now allow you to pre-shop, set up your little cart because everybody
online.
knows how to online, because you then can go and be in line for the pre-orders and not be in the hours and hours long line for the just want to walk into the store and actually see buds on a shelf, which is part of the experience of people who go for the first time. So you can do that, but how much discretionary income is that going to take out of it? What's the overlap between a cannabis customer and the clientele for casino? I think there's some overlap there. And then the fall of the stock market, 16% down recently for the Dow. Are people feeling flush? Are they feeling like putting it on the line at the casino?
I think downturns sometimes make people do just that.
They go and they bet it all. What's left.
Exactly. It's funny you mentioned the discretionary dollars with regard to marijuana. Now, Ian Pickus in New York, Governor Cuomo created some waves a week ago, said, okay, it's coming, and it's in my first 100 days, I want to get this done. I want recreational marijuana legalized in New York. So the competition, much as the Connecticut casinos are feeling a pinch from Massachusetts, we'll see what Massachusetts feels like when the New York market gets rolling.
Especially because this is being promoted as a way of boosting tax revenue. So the question is, how can the state do that to a level where it's making what it wants to make on the sales while also not encouraging a black market to continue to thrive if the taxes are too high? It will be very interesting to see what happens. And as you mentioned, if this is going to happen in the beginning of next year or at least be promoted by the governor, you know, how much political capital does he want to spend on that coming off his second re-election or a second election? It'll be interesting to see.
That question of how much should a state tax cannabis is they aim for the sweet spot there. And the legislature, after the referendum approved this, working through trying to figure out what that number is to capture revenue for municipal and state government while discouraging gray market, black market operations. It's a funny number. It works out to about 3% for municipalities. I believe the closest one to the Albany area will be the one that opens in Pittsfield, Temescal Wellness, any day now. Come on over Route 20.
No, you can't say that, Larry. No, you can't. First of all, I believe a federal crime to bring it across state lines, and it's not legal in New York at this point.
Thank you for pointing that out, Ray.
You know, and there are practical problems, just like that fact that it is the federal government does not approve of this, and how does it get into the bank? How does the money involved get into the banking system? Also, another issue here is if you are charged with driving while under the influence of marijuana, how does the law enforcement agency actually check that? Do they check blood levels? Is there an easy check for that?
We discussed this with David Soares, and I think I discussed it with him off the air. He and his team were heading to Colorado to look into some of these matters.
Yep.
And I still don't know how New York will do it. I think that every state that follows Massachusetts, follows Colorado, for instance, and then Massachusetts and so on, will be gaining based on the experience of these other states. But Governor Cuomo has a very, it would seem, an ambitious plan here, and there's a lot of details to work out.
It's like all of these issues where if your neighbors start doing it, it makes it a lot easier in some ways for you to pursue the same path. And I'll give you another example that really blossomed this year, sports gambling.
Yeah.
When I was growing up, it was verboten for sports and gambling to mix, and there could never be a team in Las Vegas for that reason. And Pete Rose had to be made an example of for that reason. And now we've got the Golden Knights in Vegas and more teams looking at it from other sports. We have MGM signing up with leagues to offer sports betting, and we have the first legal sports gambling happening in New England, in Rhode Island this year. So that's one of those areas where it starts, you know, starts kind of slowly over a period of years, and then the dam breaks and everyone wants to get in on it. And it looks like recreational marijuana is sort of the same way here.
Hey, but as the mother in the room, I'd like to say, if your friends are jumping off a cliff, does that mean you want to jump off a cliff as well?
Are we turning the country into Potterville, like in It's a Wonderful Life, where there's rampant, well, you know, here's the thing about alcohol and the black market. Really, I'm sure there's still a black market, but really the end of Prohibition killed that. You got to assume that marijuana legalization will eventually kill that black market, regardless of if it's a 26% tax, which is what they're discussing about in Vermont.
Well, plus in the Colorado experience, it becomes a commodity. And so while the prices are pretty high right now in Massachusetts, they'll come down as more producers come online. That's what happened in Colorado. So the numbers will come down, and I think that will eventually compete with the illicit trade.
You one know, more. Oh, I'm sorry, Judy.
Yeah, one point for I was at the in the state of Washington a couple of years ago, and one positive benefit for the newspaper industry were that all the recreational shops were really good print advertisers. So the businesses were seeing
because of the
revenue.
Price points. They want to advertise. Hey, we've got it. We've got the best price.
I was just going to say that the interesting trivia question for the first recreational sales in Northampton was that the mayor bought the first product, but it was a candy bar, and he kept it on his shelf, and he's going to donate it to a historical society down the line.
Yeah.
So the first sale was not really the bud you might buy.
The number here is 800-348-2551. We talk about the top news stories of 2018 with an expert panel, including Judy Patrick of the New York Press Service, Larry Parnas of the Berkshire Eagle, and WAMC News Director Ian Pickus. Again, you can join in, 800-348-2551. Judy Patrick, what's the one story that has been under the radar that you think shouldn't have been this year?
You know, from my perspective, I thought we tried to cover it as a state journalism industry, but I think ethics in state government remains a big issue. You saw the trials of both Sheldon Silver and Dean Skelos, and then you saw the state try to increase its pay for legislative members, but really strong resistance about this outside income. So where is ethics going on in state government and also in federal government? I think that's one of the issues that's driving the American public's dissatisfaction with their elected leaders, and I just don't think it gets covered well enough. It's hard to cover, I agree, but I think it's something that deserves a lot of attention.
And I know you have done that, and we do that here, but don't you think you have to some extent, do what sells when you're in the newspaper business? There's a tremendous amount of apathy among voters, especially in New York, who have seen this go on and on and on and on.
It would be nice to start from a place where people knew who their state legislators were, let alone what kinds of shady things they might be doing in office. And it's very distressing. I agree with you. We spend so much airtime pounding away at these issues. We talk to Blair Horner once a week. He's on doing his commentary, and we're right up the street from the Capitol, so we pay very close attention. But anecdotally, you ask someone you meet on the street, hey, who's your state assemblyman? Who represents you in the Senate? They don't know. They don't know, let alone what their outside job is and why that might be a corrupting influence.
And why do you think that is, Larry Parnas? Why the apathy?
Boy.
you a hard one.
Do you think they don't care?
I think people may see it as just the way the system works, which is horribly cynical, but in some ways a practical way of going about it.
You know, when I grew up, I always looked at politicians like the president or my congressperson or the mayor or the superintendent of the schools an esteemed place. And that's when I grew up in the 60s and in the 70s. That's where I don't know where the erosion in public trust in our leadership began, but it's something I think we should pay closer attention to.
You know, just on that, people tend to, you know, despise Congress but like their congressperson.
Yeah.
Is there a similar effect going on in terms of trusting government in general? Are you more likely to trust your select board member or your city councilor, your ward councilor, and then it starts to fade pretty quickly beyond that because you don't have a direct relationship with them?
Yeah, you see that all everywhere. You like your local guy, but the body in general is not to be trusted.
Even if your local guy is under indictment, like Chris Collins.
Yeah. Re-elected.
That's
an amazing thing.
It sure is. I can't wait to see what happens with that because presumably at some point there will be a trial and the rubber will hit the road.
Well, he was reelected, so presumably someone can be appointed of the same party. Isn't that what this is all about?
Yeah.
Our number here is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. Top news stories of 2018. Ian Pickus, what is the biggest story that was under the radar for the WAMC newsroom?
Ooh, that's a tough one. That's a tough question. What did we do a poor job of this year?
Well, not necessarily. I mean, one that we may have covered, but one that maybe you think should have gotten more play around the state or around the region.
You know, every time we do an environmental story, the people who are very passionate about that particular environmental issue are very excited about it. But by and large, we don't hear a ton outside of that crew. And I'll give you an example. There was this plan looked at to put anchorage sites on the Hudson River. And people who pay attention to the health of the Hudson River, which is its own industry, were up in arms about it. And all of the elected officials across party lines seemed to be in agreement that they at least wanted more study or outright opposed it. And we covered this issue for months.
Allison Dunn was all over it.
And I don't know if that story got as much play as it may have. And I'll give you a codicil to that. Late last week, on the eve of Christmas, the New York State DEC put out a report saying, we don't believe the PCB cleanup of the Hudson River is complete yet, and it seemed to be perhaps a preemptive move against the EPA declaring the cleanup over. And that story, you know, for us, that's a top news story. That's going to lead Northeast Report Late Edition. That is a huge deal. The Hudson River is the lifeblood of New York for hundreds of years. And I see what gets hits on the website.
It's not that.
Hudson River Health. Anchorage sites, I mean, if we catch the algorithm in the right way a certain day, maybe it'll lead, but more likely than not, it will not.
Well, the opioid crisis was huge, and, I mean, Dave Lucas's story on the gray death today already generating traffic. I guess the opioid crisis is one that we haven't talked about today that is in every little community, in every big community, and across the country.
And, you know, it's a story that grew over time, and it became more and more important as it hit almost every family in some way. But it's such a broad problem that you have law enforcement issues, criminal justice issues, and all sorts of health issues, socioeconomic issues to cover with it. It's one of those stories that's almost like the Trump-Russian investigation that's so large that people say it's too much for me to handle and walk away.
With layers and layers of public intervention from different governmental bodies, and then it becomes hard, I think, for people who try to follow these issues to know what's actually moving the needle on this stuff. One of the things that is most reliably used as a statistic is unintentional overdose deaths, and yet those are coming down in Massachusetts, but it's believed it's largely because of the use of Narcan to revive people, so that you can't take that as a measure that the epidemic itself is lessening.
You know, this was an issue that came up in Berkshire County a lot this year because of the race for DA, which we covered pretty closely. Actually, there were two races for DA. There was a big Democratic primary, and then the guy who lost stayed in for the general. And it was interesting for me to learn about, especially by the reporting from Josh Landis, our Berkshire's bureau chief, is It's very hard to make a unified approach toward a unwieldy and very devastating issue like this if the people in public office don't have agreement on how it should be handled. And neighboring sheriffs in Western Massachusetts, one allows the use of drugs like Narcan in the jail, one doesn't. Those are two totally different approaches to handling this addiction problem. And so as people are, you know, voting and electing leaders, that's something to think about.
Our number here is 800-348-2551. Judy Patrick is here, Larry Parnas and Ian Pickus, as we discuss the top news stories of 2018. Tell you what, let's take a call before we take our second break for the program. Kevin in Hudson, you're on.
Hey guys. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm just going to ask a question about the government shutdown and the employees that's going to be out of work for however long the government shutdown is gonna happen for, and how those people is gonna get paid? How are they supposed to take care of their family over all this time?
It's a very good question. Now, my understanding of the issue is that they will be paid retroactive pay once the departments, and I think it's seven departments, are being funded again. But you know, a lot of Americans live paycheck to paycheck, certainly. So I think that question itself is sort of the impetus for our leaders to
get
to
a deal
solve
done.
The shutdown here.
All right, Kevin. Thanks a lot for the call. Anybody else want to comment before we take a break? No? Judy?
Doesn't seem to be a lot of interest in moving to reopening government, though, does there?
Well, I have the House calendar on my desk, and you know, John Faso is here today. He's not probably going back to Washington for a vote. They're not going to open again until January 2nd, and that's just the day when they move their stuff in, and January 3rd, maybe some bills come up. So I don't know. I mean, they always have a way of doing it at the last minute if they need to very quickly, but not if nobody's there.
He makes a point.
Well, that last-minute deal was supposedly in place.
The Senate had a deal. Mm-hmm. They couldn't get it done in time, and now we're in this, you know, weird Christmas to New Year's stretch.
Our number here is 800-348-2551. Judy Patrick is here, Larry Parnas and Ian Pickus. Top news stories of 2018. We'll hear more of your calls coming up.
For WAMC comes from Daughters of Sarah, Albany, New York, providing seniors with transitional care and rehabilitation therapy as they move from hospital care to another level of care or home. Daughtersofsarah.org. Myron Wine and Spirits, Kingston. Since 1960, a wine and spirit shop with thousands of imported and domestic wines and spirits and staff for questions and advice. Myron Wine and Spirits on Facebook. Vision Excel Eye Care, Lake Katrine. Exams, eye care, dry eye therapy, and now new American-made frames where eyewear is an art. VisionExcelEyeCare.com. Merritt Bookstore, an independent book and toy store in Millbrook, New York, with calendars, self-help books, cookbooks, and more for the new year. MerrittBookstore.com. Capital Roots, making fresh local produce accessible to Capital Region neighborhoods. Healthy, affordable food should be a right, not a privilege. CapitalRoots.org for more. And Windy Hollow Veterinary Clinic, Montague, Massachusetts. Conventional and integrative veterinary medicine, including acupuncture, comprehensive pet care, and health services since 1998. WendyHollowVet.com.
It's Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here. Number is 800-348-2551. Larry Parnas of the Berkshire Eagle, Judy Patrick of the New York Press Service, and WAMC's Ian Pickus are here talking about the top news stories of the year. And you can join us by calling that number, 800-348-2551. We have an email here and a few calls. But, Larry, let's briefly touch on a story that was pretty huge in your neck of the woods this year.
Mm-hmm. Well, the Berkshire Museum, I think you mean.
Yep.
It came into 2018 still locked in legal combat between the museum, which wanted to sell 40 works and raise as much as $60 million, and a whole cluster of opponents of that, both private plaintiffs and the Attorney General's office, which as of about a year ago was 6 months into an investigation into whether this was an appropriate thing for a public charity to do. Anybody who's followed the story knows that the main combatants there came to terms. So even really early in this year, Ray, in February, the Attorney General's office and the museum agreed to go together to the Supreme Judicial Court and seek permission to move ahead with the sale. And,
okay. Yep. But what is the underlying issue that would resonate with somebody sitting on his front porch in Catskill who just got done with his shift and he's going to work again tomorrow? What is the issue that would resonate with anyone outside of that area?
I think it has to do with cultural inheritance. Some of the works sold had been in possession of the Berkshire Museum for a century and longer. Some of the most famous works that were sold were given to the museum by Norman Rockwell. That's a name almost everybody, no matter what couch they're on, knows that name. If it matters to people to be able to go to a regional museum and see world-class art, then this was something that was significant.
Especially when you say it was given by Norman Rockwell, I mean himself. He handed the works over to the museum. It was a huge deal.
Let's do one email here, and then we'll get to the phones. This one is from Joel. One bright light for seniors to be found in the recent declining stock market is that their required minimum distributions for the 2019 tax year will be calculated on lower year-end 2018 holdings. Instead of a higher RMD and tax obligation, we'll enjoy a several $1,000 lower tax bill.
Well, there's a silver lining.
Wow. Yeah.
You know, it's that kind of optimism that makes public radio listeners so important. All right, let's go to the phones, 800-348-2551. Kathy in Seward, New York. Kathy, you're on.
Hi, I don't know if you might have mentioned earlier, one of the big news stories of the year to my mind was, the issue with the migrants at the border and how a whole group of them wound up in the Albany County Jail due to the auspices of Sheriff Craig Apple.
Yeah, we covered this, and let's talk to our news director, Ian Pickus, because we have been on that one.
Yeah, and I would refer you to a great series we ran just leading up to Christmas on the law enforcement in our communities. The last part of that six-part series was Lucas Willard's magnum opus of this December, and he reports from inside the jail, and you can get that at WAMC.org. But certainly if you listen to AMC, then you know Sarah Rogerson from the law school has been leading the charge here. And yes, it's a great example of localizing a story. You hear about the border, it sounds far away, and then the people show up in Albany County.
Yeah, it was pretty amazing, and that whole situation on the border is astonishing, to say the least, and now they've lost another child while in custody there. It's very sad and very bad, and I hope that something can change about that real soon.
Well, Kathy, thank you very much for the call, and we appreciate it. Our number is 800-348-2551. Judy Patrick is here, Larry Parnas, and Ian Pickus, and they're talking to you about the top news stories of 2018. David in New Paltz. David, you're on.
Hi, Ray. Thanks for a great show here.
Thank you.
Listen, I have to say that the opioid crisis is handled better in other countries than the United States. Prohibition has never worked, even with liquor, during the 20s and 30s. And the way the rich people who handled their addicted relatives is they send them to a country that has better health-related recovery than the United States, where they use law enforcement instead of a medical solution to that problem. And people are taking opioids not to get high, but to relieve pain. So they're basically medicating themselves. And like I say, it's a health issue. It's not a law enforcement issue. And that's all I have to say about that.
I think what we hear often from law enforcement officials is that they don't want necessarily to arrest their way out of this problem either, but they're the first responders in so many cases. They're the first ones on the scene. They see somebody, God forbid, ODing or something, and they're the first contact in a lot of cases.
David, thanks for the call. Our number here is 800-348-2551. An email came in from Stu. It says, hi, all. One of the top news items that should have dominated the Hudson Valley is the death of the, or passing, he says, or death. We'll call it death of Frank Skartatos, and it should have been covered more. Ian, you want to handle that one?
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to sound defensive, but I know it was a huge deal and a shocking story because it wasn't known just how advanced his cancer was.
Yeah.
But we did cover his death. And in fact, recently he got some posthumous credit for having secured some funding in the Hudson Valley. And we covered that press conference as well at AMC. So Allison Dunn was on that one. And it led to an open seat during an election year. So that's another way in which it resonated.
Our number is 800-348-2551. Jeff in Statsburg. Jeff, you're on.
Yes, good afternoon. I think it was beginning of this year when there was a young white man who went into a church with the people and killed these like 9 people that were just under doing their daily prayers. I think that's one of the most important stories for our times because the idea of stirring up a bunch of hatred against black people or whoever, and just the idea that we actually have this in our culture to deal with, and we better do it.
Anybody?
Yeah, we better. I mean, that has been one of the undercovered issues of the year of 2018.
Wasn't that this year? And it's so significant in terms of our nature.
Yeah,
and how we react and how we deal with it.
You know, there are other mass shootings this year. Let's not forget Parkland, which was not racially motivated, but 17 people died at Parkland High School back on Valentine's Day. And that prompted this rise of a young people's movement for gun control, which was interesting. I'm not sure how long-lasting it will be, but for the first 6 months of the year, it seemed like it was a pretty powerful movement.
Absolutely. And it's one that we return to again and again here because we talked to the congressional representative for Connecticut's 5th District who represents Newtown. And that's been an issue for almost exactly 6 years when that shooting happened in late 2012. First, Chris Murphy, who had just been elected to the U.S. Senate, and then Elizabeth Esty. And I'm the producer of the Congressional Corner, so I hear all of these multiple times. And it's amazing to hear for a period of 6 years, first Murphy, then Esty, soon to be Johanna Hayes, each mentioning just wanting to do some real basic changes to our gun law and not having made much progress in that direction. And then, you know, the shootings do stack up.
What do you make of the ban on bump stocks, federal ban?
Oh, how do you mean?
As a response, as a way to counter.
It seems to me that it's one of the few areas where enough people can agree about it because, you know, left and right on this issue are far apart. But most, at least in the Northeast, I think most of the people we talk to who are broadly supportive of the Second Amendment have no problem with a ban on bump stocks.
Mm-hmm. You know, back to the original issue about racially, you know, our racial motivated hate that's spewing across the social media. I think the social media rise and now you've seen it fall, at least its integrity in the eyes of a lot of people, is another big story of the year. The fact that people started to lose faith in their social media platforms.
That's interesting, yeah.
And start to come away from Facebook a little bit, Twitter a little bit, but they definitely...
Could that mean the newspapers are not dead?
Newspapers will never die.
Yeah?
You know, I don't think of Facebook's travails as a local story, but, you know, it is local engagement. It's all of the people who are Facebook users who, in all of our communities, spend a lot of the time that they're also listening to the radio, of course, but they're... Could be reading
a few
the newspaper.
Of them, yes,
that is a very significant local story, and under the radar.
And as someone who is on it for work, I find it sort of impossible to delete my account the way so many other people have upon the latest disclosures about the stolen information because we got to post our stuff to Facebook and get those eyeballs.
You know, it's so difficult for any of us, and we have to always be filtering through the feeds, various feeds, all day long, and we do that all day long. It's so tough to really figure out what is true and what is not true. And that is why I think newspapers have been so important. And to some extent, the social media made newspapers weaker. And I jokingly said the death of newspapers, but do you think they could bounce back as a reaction to this?
You know, that's one of my hopes at this point, because social media was so destructive to newspapers, especially their online leadership. But I think they may be the cause of their own undoing as people go away from them, because they're not getting news. They're not getting things they can trust. Perhaps the mainstream media can build some sort of platform where people can go to and they say, oh, this is credible. We can rely on this information. We don't have to worry about bots from Russia infiltrating our feed. We can get the information we want when we want it. So I'm thinking that's the future. And you know, I'm sorry for Facebook. I was an avid user for a long time, but I don't check it nearly as often as I used to. Mm.
Of course, if people decide that I'm going to read about my community in the pages of the newspapers or by listening to commercial or public radio, these organizations still need to recover, at least the commercial ones do, the advertising support that was their backbone. And that's, I think, gone digital and is not coming back.
You know, I think my hope is that you will get people paying for content eventually, at least in some small measure.
That's a tough thing for a newspaper to sell, the paywall. It's so tough. And we've seen the big papers try it and the smaller papers try it, and it always seems to kind of fall flat. I guess the New York Times is making some money finally.
Well, the industry as a whole is really kind of standing solidly behind the advent of paywalls, and I think you're right, Ray. They have come and gone, and thinking has changed on that. But I think they're here to stay now.
You just have to market it in a different way. I'll give you an example. My students at UAlbany, they pay $11 a month for Netflix without thinking about it, and they pay something like that for Spotify without a second thought. So you just got to sort of get into that model where it's just an accepted fact that you pay for this content, and somehow news has to do that. Let me tell my social media story real quick before we run out of time.
Oh, please do.
One of my favorite news moments of the year was during one of Governor Cuomo's recent interviews with Allen. He's done maybe five weeks in a row.
Yeah.
And Allen was talking to Governor Cuomo live on the radio while Donald Trump tweeted a mean thing about Andrew Cuomo. And we were able to ask the governor for his reaction in real time. And that, to me, was what media looks like in 2018. Mm. We still had this role to do as a radio station interrogating the governor. But meantime, Donald Trump changed the script with his two thumbs.
Now, he wasn't listening, was he?
We don't know.
You know, and to the governor's credit, I think his response was, you know, well, that's just Donald being Donald, and you can't react to every tweet. He wasn't really taking great umbrage at the mean things the president was tweeting about him at that moment.
I don't know. You know, it's been, as I said at the beginning of the show, this has been one heck of a year, and I've had enough. And Judy Patrick, let's look in the crystal ball. 2019, where are we going?
I'm thinking we're going to see some resolution on that Trump-Russia probe.
Well, it must happen eventually.
And, you know, see the light of day of Bob Mueller, who I'd like to actually hear talk again. You know, I have this vision of him in some, you know, top floor of a building, just, you know, investigating and sending his minions out. I think there will be some that has to develop. You'll see the start of the presidential race for 2020, which will be a big deal. And, hey, maybe we'll see some ethics reform at the state level. State of New York.
Are you optimistic or pessimistic about that last fact?
I am pessimistic about that one, but I'm still going to, I think every newspaper editor across New York State would lobby for it. Ethics reform.
Larry Parnas.
You know, next year, I think we'll know whether a mediation effort to bring the sides together on the Housatonic River PCB cleanup will go in a new direction, or whether the EPA is going to hold firm to its description of the order of conditions of the cleanup that it set for the General Electric Company. You know, here's a kind of reprising what the Albany area knows so well. And Ian, you mentioned earlier that it's not done here. Even some of the fiercest advocates of river cleanup for the Housatonic complain that the EPA's planned remedy for the Housatonic leaves a lot of PCBs in the river.
Well, there were those in the beginning of the Hudson River PCB cleanup who said, hey, wait, if you dredge it, it's going to make so much more problem because all of this stuff is coming up and it's going to get suspended again. Mm-hmm. So there are those who say, leave it. Don't dredge it. Leave it. Ian Pickus, what's ahead for you in 2019, aside from mass firings in the newsroom, which we know it's coming?
Hopefully I'm not on that list. No. From a congressional corner producer standpoint, I'm very interested to hear what the new Democrats do, especially in our coverage area. We have a lot of people coming in, and some of them were elected in more conservative districts and aren't going to support Nancy Pelosi, like Anthony Brindisi. Others were supported by voters who want to see the president impeached. And I am very curious to see what the House Democrats do with their majority and how far they want to push things. Locally, we didn't talk a lot about drinking water pollution, but the PFAS chemicals that have wreaked havoc in places like Rensselaer County and Bennington, Vermont, and Newburgh, New York, those effects are going to be with us for years and years and years, and I can't wait to see what happens in terms of the company's remediation efforts.
Well, Ian Pickus, thank you very much for being here. Larry Thanks. Parnas and Judy Patrick, thank you both.
You're welcome.
Appreciate
You're
you making your time available today. Support comes from Dr. Lucy Chapik, Latham, New York, a plastic surgeon dedicated to aesthetic cosmetic surgery, procedures including head-to-toe skin tightening with tempture, fat transfers, facial rejuvenation since 1996, 518-786-1700. Paul Smith's College, students pursuing degrees in environmental studies, recreation, science, forestry, management, add more hands-on education at the college's 14,000-acre lakeside campus, paulsmiths.edu. The Gift Garden, Bennington, Vermont, florist and gift shop, featuring fresh flowers, arrangements, green and blossoming plants, home decor, candles, gift baskets on Main Street, thegiftgardenvt.com. And Interactive Media Consulting, a team of online market strategists providing websites, branding, and digital marketing to the Capital Region and beyond since 1996, imediaconsult.com. Thanks again to Judy Patrick, Larry Parnas, and Ian Pickus for being here. Thank you for listening and for some terrific questions and comments today. And thanks to our engineer, Zach Malloy. Beautiful job, Zach. Your phones were answered by Dina Salzman. And our producer is Jim Lavoulis. I'm Ray Graff. Oh, this is a sad, it's a bittersweet moment tomorrow. It's a science forum. That's sweet. But it's the final one of 2018. And frankly, I'm bitter about it. But it starts at 2 p.m. Right now, stand by for news.